become the first king. When he continued to disobey the things that God had asked him to do, God decided it was time for change. God decided we need to get a new king. God picked a young shepherd boy named David. You are awake. Okay, one or two of you are. Okay. Boy, okay, got to wake the rest of you up. Okay. We saw how the prophet Samuel went to David while he was a boy and anointed him with oil, which was the act that brought about God put his spirit on David. And it's as if, even though it would be years before David would actually become king, he was already king. It's kind of like, you know, we talk about, on Wednesday night, Jim Hesley was talking about our position in Christ. We are seated in the heavenlies. As far as God is concerned, it's done, it's over, it's finished, and we're seated with Christ in heaven. And we're perfect, and we're complete, and there's no more junk in our lives, and everything's wonderful. And that's how God sees us. Now, you look in the mirror, and you say, well, is that the way it is? No, we got a few years left. It's kind of like that. And so God had anointed David to be king. He would be king, but it would take a few years. Now, after that incident, that's when David met Goliath. And, you know, that's probably the big thing that we all remember David for, is being the giant killer. And we talked about that last week, about David and Goliath. It was after this, it was with this killing of Goliath that God brought a great victory for Israel. And at that time, we saw on Sunday night that Jonathan, Saul's son, became very fond of David. After all, they were kind of two of a kind. They were cut out of the same cloth. Both were brave. Both were men who trusted in the Lord. When David returns from his victory over Goliath, the people wrote some tunes. And one of the top tunes of that day went like this. And when Saul has slain his thousands, David has slain his 10,000s or something. I don't know what the tune was. Excuse me for the tune. But the people were, you know, Saul's cool. He's killed his thousands. But David has killed his 10,000s. When Saul heard this, I mean, everywhere he goes, he turns on the local radio station and there's this song playing, you know. And it drives him nuts because he's still king. He doesn't know about this anointing thing. He has been told that the kingdom has been torn from him. But as far as he knows, he's still got the crown. He's still king. And he's mad as all get out that David's getting all this credit. We read about how an evil spirit begins to trouble Saul. And if you track it, it's every time Saul gets angry and jealous at David. And this evil spirit begins to trouble him. Saul begins to secretly devise ways of having David killed. And last week in chapter 18, he starts by sending David out to fight more Philistines, hoping the Philistines will kill David because he just can't stand this kid. This kid's driving him nuts. He comes up with this idea of having his daughter Michal marry David. And because she's kind of head over heels with the guy, and he thinks, well, let's see, I know, I'll say you can marry Michal if you kill 100 Philistines. David goes out and kills 200. But, you know, he was hoping that maybe at least number 58 or 59 would kill David. Yet David keeps prospering. And David continues to become more and more popular among the people. Sean, could you turn me up just a little teeny notch? Thank you. We can sometimes think of David only in terms of being the giant killer. I don't know about you, but that's, you know, what do you think of when you think of David? You think of Goliath, you know, and kills the giant. Actually, that was only one little portion of his life. In fact, David, who is known as the man after God's own heart. Now, you read that phrase, you think, Oh, this is a guy God really likes. This is a guy that God just, oh, God, God's madly in love with David, a man after God's own heart. Oh, you're just after my own heart, David. Oh, I just love you, love you, love you. But in reality, David's life was filled with trouble. So we're going to look at one chapter. We're going to look at 1 Samuel 19. Look at one chapter out of David's life and look at how he handles his troubles. How David handles his troubles. We'll pick it up in chapter 19. We'll just do the whole chapter, verse 1. And Saul spake to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. Now, see, up to this point, it's been a secret. Saul's been cooking up these little ideas, and he thinks, well, I'll send him out to kill the Philistines, and the Philistines will kill him. You know, this is what we'll do. But that's not working. Finally, he's got to turn up the heat a little bit. So he gathers all his close guys together, including his son Jonathan, who loves David. And he says, you know what? You've got to go kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now, therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee, and what I see, that I will tell thee. And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, and because his works have been to thee word very good. For he did put his life in his hand, and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? Now, in reality, David hasn't done a single thing. He hasn't done a single thing that Saul should be angry with. He hasn't been speaking behind Saul's back. He hasn't been going, oh yeah, David at 10,000, that's me, you know, it's my birthday, you know, it's me, you know, I'm the cool one here, you know. He hasn't been getting Saul's servants together and say, you know, did I tell you about the time that Samuel poured the oil on me, you know? He hasn't been doing anything like this. In fact, all along the way, David has been feeling totally unworthy about all that's happened to him. Totally unworthy. First time Saul proposed that David marry one of his daughters, Merib, David said, oh, no way, I'm just a poor nothing. I couldn't marry into the king's family. And even with the second daughter, David's first response was, well, I'm too poor of a guy. I could never do this. And that's when he comes up with the kill the 100 Philistines thing. David, all along the way, has nothing but love and admiration for Saul. Sometimes jealousy and hatred, beloved, is very irrational. And sometimes the things we kind of don't like about people really don't make any sense at all. Well, Jonathan talks to him and verse 6, and Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Jonathan sware, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all these things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. So what happened? Jonathan steps up and sees that there's a problem between dad and David. And he goes and talks to dad for David and sticks up for David, and he brings peace. We see Jonathan acting as a peacemaker here. Friends will do that for friends. Friends will be a peacemaker. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. It's a good thing to be a peacemaker. Paul says in Romans 12:18, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. It's a good thing to be a peacemaker. But Paul does say, as much as it lieth within you, or as much as you can. In other words, sometimes you can try, but it doesn't work. And we just have to face that fact. But we still need to try. Still need to try. That's not really a very fun thing. Sometimes I would just rather stay mad at somebody. Wouldn't you? Because somebody is, you know, they are a jerk. And I frankly don't want to be the one to take the step. Jonathan's doing a good thing here. But I gotta tell you this, though. It doesn't last for very long. Does that mean that Jonathan shouldn't have done it? Not at all. Not at all. As much as is possible, as much as lieth in you, be at peace. So Jonathan gives it a try. And it works for a little while. And then it says, verse 8, and there was war again. And David went out and fought with the Philistines. David's kind of like, you know, the top commander. He's the top fighter. And David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter. And they fled from him. Now, something that hit me, from last Sunday morning, look at chapter 17. You remember the Goliath thing? Remember when Goliath came out? Remember the armies were on opposite hills? You know, there's a valley between them, and then the champion, the one man, comes out saying, I challenge somebody one-on-one right here, right now. You know, and Goliath's 9 feet, 9 inches tall. So somebody was pointing out that, you know, Shaq is, what, 7'2", 7'3"? 7'3". Goliath is 2 feet, 6 inches taller than Shaq. He's huge. And look what he said. Look at this promise, this challenge of the Philistine. In chapter 17, verse 9, it says, if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, you send out a champion. And Sean, you have to add reverb or something, pal. You got to make it more of a scary. If he be able to fight with me, and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. Dude, if you remember what Goliath said, he said, I've got a deal for you. Let's go one-on-one, and whoever wins, wins the whole thing. And there will be no more war. The loser, his whole country, will serve the other country. Did you see that? Did you see that's what he's saying? So what happens here back in chapter 19, verse 8? What's this war thing again? What's the Philistines coming out to war again for? Hey, I thought we had a deal here. Huh? I thought we had this contract, you know, this peace agreement with the Philistines. Sorry. I'm getting political, aren't I? Didn't mean to be. Because I don't want you to get off track. The point I want to make is this. The enemy, Satan. The enemy is a liar. The enemy is a liar. And he will threaten you with all kinds of things. He will make you promises. He will say all kinds of things to get you to do what he wants. But he is a liar. He is the father of lies. He is the thief who comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Sometimes when we're being tempted, Satan will say, well, just give in this one last time and you'll never be bothered again. Have you ever heard, how many of you have ever heard that one? Okay. Let's flip it over. How many of you ever heard, Well, if you just say no this one more time, I'll never bother you again. You know what? That's not always the truth. Because he's going to continue to tempt you. He's going to continue to fight. The battle is never over, no matter what Goliath promises. Having one victory over Goliath doesn't put an end to the war. You see it? Verse 9. So, David goes out, and he slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand. And David played with his hand. He's playing his music. The word there means he's playing his guitar or harp. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. If you follow the progression, Saul has had a problem with jealousy over David. He is afraid. He's afraid of David. He's paranoid. He's totally jealous of the victories that David has had. And so what happens? David has another victory, and Saul's jealousy kicks in, and the evil spirit troubles him, and he goes nuts again. Don't misunderstand me here. Jealousy isn't by itself demonic. It's your flesh. It's sown into you. You know, the word flesh, when we talk about the word flesh in the Bible, that's our sin nature. That's another word for our sin nature. We call it the old man, it's called. I always think of Peter Pan for some reason. I'm sorry. Too many children's movies. But you know, in Peter Pan, you know, he had a problem with the shadow. Remember when he first meets Wendy and he's trying to get a shadow and catch it, and they sew it into his, remember it? Well, it's kind of like, you know, that in a way, like your sin nature is like your, you know, a shadow. But you know what? You never lose it. You will always have your sin nature. It doesn't get away from you. It is sewed into this body until you die. And jealousy is a part of that sin nature. It's a part of that flesh. In Ephesians 4, verses 26 and 27, it says, "Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath." In other words, don't stay angry for very long. And then he says, "Neither give place to the devil." Neither give place to the devil. The word place means any portion or space marked off. It's a toehold. It's a piece of real estate. Don't give the enemy any real estate in your life. And how's one way that happens? Paul says, be angry, but sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. And what Paul's saying in Ephesians is that sometimes your anger, just like jealousy, you continue to live in it. You continue to let it go. You continue to not deal with it. And after a while, it's almost as if Satan has just bought a little piece of real estate in your life. And so, if he can bring some things around in your life that can set that off, oh yeah. Oh, he's sitting there going, "Oh, woo-wee! Oh, I'm so glad. Look at this. Woo-hoo! He's having a great day." And so, beloved, don't let the flesh go. Don't not deal with the flesh. Don't think, "Oh, it's not that big of a deal. I can be angry with her for a couple of days." No, you can't. No, you can't. You're giving Satan territory. Don't do it. The flesh opens a door. It gives Satan a toehold in your life. You don't want to be there. And so it said that David, so that this evil spirit comes on Saul, and it says David played with his hand. Now, if you remember, David first came in contact with Saul back in chapter 16, I think it was, when Saul first began to have this problem with this evil spirit thing. And David was hired by Saul's servants to play the guitar, to play his music. Because they heard that this guy was a great musician. And the idea, these guys had this thought that whenever Saul is bothered, we'll turn on the music and things will calm down. And that's kind of what we're hoping. And you know what? That's what happened. God sometimes uses music. You know, music can be something that can soothe us for a while. But here, Saul starts to go nuts, and David reaches for his guitar. He starts to play a few lines of, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, or something like that, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. There can be relief from the enemy by lots of different things. Today, people do all kinds of things to make them feel better. Some of the things we do to make ourselves feel better are sinful. Some of them aren't sinful, and they work. I'm really down and depressed, and go to Disneyland. That can work. That can help a little bit. But you know where the victory really comes? Is when Jesus sets you free. John 8:36, if the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. Jesus is the one remedy that keeps working. Jesus set us free by his death on the cross. Colossians chapter 2 verse 13 says, you were dead because of your sins, and because of your sinful nature was not yet cut away. Then God made you alive with Christ. He forgave all our sins. He canceled the record that contained the charges against us. He took it and destroyed it by nailing it to Christ's cross. In this way, God disarmed the rulers, the evil rulers and authorities. He shamed them publicly by his victory over them on the cross of Christ. And it's when we open our hearts to him that we begin to receive this victory. I've known people over the years who like our music. And I've known people over the years who, just any worship music, and they feel bad and they feel troubled and they put a music on. And you know what? That's okay. That's good if you're doing it the right way. But if you're not letting Jesus set you free, it's not going to work forever. There's going to be a day where David will play his guitar and it doesn't work anymore. Jesus needs to be the one to set you free. And when he sets you free, you are free indeed. Verse 11. So, where am I? I don't know where I am. I'm at church. Oh, okay. Sorry. Thank you very much. So David fled and escaped that night. Verse 11. Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. He's going to finish it here and now. He's not going to let this go on anymore. And so he sends messengers to David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain. She's got this feeling that dad's going to do it. And she says, honey, if you don't get out of the house and do it now, you will be dead in the morning. And so Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. So he gets out of there. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed. The word image is teraphim. It's a word for an idol. an image. I don't know what David was doing having a teraphim in his house. I kind of get the feeling, though, it's Michal's. Anyway, I'm getting off track. So Michal took an image, laid it in the bed, and put a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster and covered it with a cloth. She's doing the old, he's in bed asleep routine. Did you ever used to do that with your parents? You know, you sneak out and you would be, okay, that's what she's doing there. And she's got this goat's hair thing, looks like David's hair, must have been a red-headed goat or something. And she's got this stuff, so it looks like, you know, she's got a really good thing going here. Nothing new. This is 1000 B.C. So you thought that trick was new, huh? Verse 14. And when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, oh, he's sick. Now, if the messengers really are there to kill David, these have got to be dumb and dumber for the messengers, really. I mean, I was thinking about this, really, you know? Saul says, go kill him in the morning. And so they knock on the door, and she goes, oh, I'm sorry, you can't see him. He's sick.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see him when he's better.
Wait a minute, you're there to kill the guy. Who cares if he's sick? You get it? Okay. What Michal is doing, she's giving David a few more minutes to get a little further down the road. And verse 15, so Saul sent the messengers again to David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed, that I might slay him. I don't care if he's sick, bring the bed, bring everything. I want him dead. And when the messengers were come, behold, there was an image in the bed, with a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster. And I always wonder if they go,
oh, he's awful quiet.
Sorry. I watched too much SpongeBob. Okay. Verse 17. And Saul said unto Michal, why hast thou deceived me so, and sent away mine enemy, that he is escaped? And Michal answered Saul, oh, he said unto me, let me go. Why should I kill thee? She lies to her dad. She says, oh, well, Dad, he told me he would kill me if I didn't let him go. So she lies to him. David hadn't threatened her. Remember, this was her idea for him to run. This wasn't David's idea. Let's look at Psalm 59. Psalm 59. Keep your... we'll be back to Samuel, don't worry. Psalm 59. It's kind of my intention as we're going through David's life to try to pick up on as many of the songs as we can from Psalms. Sorry, it's the musician in me. It's the songwriter in me. Many of David's songs came... many. They all come out of life. They all come from a real life that's lived. Not always the David killing Goliath stuff. But a whole lot of David's songs come out of, oh my gosh, my life is terrible. Look at Psalm 59. There's like a little title thing to it, and it says, to the chief musician, Altashith, Michtam of David, when Saul sent and they watched the house to kill him. Okay, so that places this in the same time we're just reading about. So I don't know if David like wrote this on as he's walking out of the house, you know, all of a sudden all that. That's sometimes that's how songs come, you know. Sometimes you just get this tune, and sometimes the words come. And David's life, I mean, he's a musician, and his life is filled with music. And I don't know if this came a couple weeks later, and he wrote this afterwards. But it came out of this experience where he's running for his life. This gives us a little insight into what David is thinking at this time. Look what he says. Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Defend me from them that rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity and save me from bloody men. For lo, they lie in wait for my soul. The mighty are gathered against me, not for my transgression nor for my sin, O Lord. They run and prepare themselves without my fault. Awake to help me and behold. In other words, it's not because I've been bad. I haven't been done anything wrong, and they're out to kill me. Thou therefore, O Lord, God of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to visit all the heathen. Be not merciful to any wicked transgressors, Selah. So sometimes that's the way David is. You know, sometimes he doesn't say, O Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. David sometimes is more like, O God, break their teeth, you know, and give them a smack upside the head. Sorry, that's just David. I privately kind of like that every once in a while. Sorry. You didn't hear that from me. Verse 6, they return at evening. They make a noise like a dog and go round about the city. Behold, they belch out with their mouth. Now, no sound effects here. Swords are in their lips, for who, say they, doth hear? In other words, they're spreading slander. But thou, O Lord, shalt laugh at them. Thou shalt have all the heathen in derision. Because of his strength will I wait upon thee, for God is my defense. The God of my mercy shall prevent me, or he will go ahead of me. God shall let me see my desire upon mine enemies. Slay them not, lest my people forget. Scatter them by thy power and bring them down, O Lord, our shield. Through times like that in our lives, we're almost for no reason at all, people will take up the cause to ruin you. Consume them in wrath, consume them that they may not be, and let them know that God ruleth in Jacob unto the ends of the earth. And at evening let them return, and let them make a noise like a dog, and go round about the city. Let them wander up and down for meat, and grudge if they be not satisfied. But I will sing of thy power, yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning, for thou hast been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. Unto thee, O my strength, will I sing, for God is my defense and the God of my mercy. Now, I don't know if you noticed, several places in this psalm, David talks about God being his defense. God being his defense. We're going to look at an unusual story at the end of the chapter, but here, God being his defense meant running away. See that? He said, God, you are my defense. But what did he do here? Michal let him out down the window, and I don't know if she used her long golden hair. He lets him down out of the window, and he runs away. But he survives. And so in this case, God being his defense meant running away. But the big thing is, what did David do? He cried out to God for help. He cried out to God for help. He didn't panic too much. He cried out to God for help. Let's read on. Back to Samuel. Verse 18. Chapter 19, verse 18. So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel to Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and dwelt at Naoth, or Naoth. I'm just going to call it Naoth. I've seen it pronounced different ways, so we'll just call it Naoth. David fled and escaped and came to Samuel, told him everything that had happened. Now, if David had been in Gibeah with Saul, Ramah is only about 2 miles away, so it's not far that he's running. He runs to Samuel. Why does he run to Samuel? Why does he run to Samuel? Maybe he thinks Samuel's the only one who can protect him against the king, maybe. I kind of wonder if he's thinking, Samuel, you're the one that got me into this trouble. You know, if you hadn't poured that oil on my head, that's what started all this stuff. Sometimes we get that way, don't we? You know, God puts a great blessing. We get mad at him. We kind of wonder, what? How come you let this happen to me? He runs to Samuel at Ramah. And he and Samuel went and dwelt in Naoth. Naiot means habitations. And it appears from verse 19 that it is a place in Rama. It's a place in the city of Rama, or in the area of Rama. It apparently, from all the research that I've been doing, apparently Samuel had established what we call a school of the prophets. Kind of a school of ministry, a seminary, a Bible school at Naiot. Samuel was training up another generation of prophets. And when David runs to Samuel, they go to the Bible school. They go to the school of ministry, and that's where they hide. One of the Jewish paraphrases calls it, they went to the house of instruction. I think what they're doing is they're going to the place where they can hear more from God. Now, this is a little bit of a leap, because this is just a suggestion. Some of the Psalms don't have these little superscriptions that have suggestions of where it, when it was written. But I came across that Charles Spurgeon thought, and I know there's other people who disagree, he thought that Psalm 119 was written by David. Interesting thought. This was a new one to me. I thought someone else had written it. But look at Psalm 119 with me, would you? And this is a suggestion. Whether this is fact or not, the principles still work. So don't worry about that, okay? The principles still work. Look at Psalm 119 in verse 23. This is that really, really long one, okay? Shall we stand and read the entire... No, we're not going to stand and read the entire thing. Verse 23 says, "Princes also did sit and speak against me, but thy servant did meditate in thy statutes." In verse 51, it says, "The proud have had me greatly in derision, yet have I not declined from thy law." So whether this is David or not, the writer has experienced something similar to what David wrote, or what David has experienced. Look at verse 50. "This is my comfort in my affliction, for thy word hath quickened me." The American Standard says, "This is my comfort in my affliction, that thy word has revived me." And I see a little bit of a connection here. That David and Samuel, this is, by the way, one of David's times of affliction. And it wasn't just once or twice this happens to David. David is under affliction a lot in his life. And the writer here says, "This is how I get comfort in my affliction. Your word has revived me." They run to the school of the prophets. Interesting idea. In verse 92, it says, "Unless thy law had been my delights, I should then have perished in my affliction." You know, if I hadn't been in love with your word, God, oh, man, I would have been eaten up alive. Verse 95, it says, "The wicked have waited for me to destroy me, but I will consider thy testimonies." You know, the enemy's out there waiting to chew me up, but instead, I look to God's word. And lastly, in verse 71, "It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes." I think, dear beloved, I think probably a couple of you are, I think there's a good chance that a couple of you are having difficult times That's not even a necessary a word from the Lord. That can be just, hey, because the truth is, that's what life is on this side of heaven. We will go through tough times. And the writer here in the psalm says, you know, it was good that I got beat up. It was good that I got beat up, that I might learn your word. That I might grab a hold of the very thing that's going to sustain me. The very thing that's going to keep me going. And so, beloved, let difficult times drive you to this. Don't sink in despair. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to want to just lay in bed all day. Pull the covers over and say, oh, I'm not getting up. I ain't getting up. I'll probably botch this joke. Oh, boy. Why don't you just all laugh now and then we'll pretend that I told the joke, okay? You know, the story goes that the man, it was a Sunday morning, and the man was in bed, and the wife was getting up to go to church. He said, honey, it's time to get up, go to church. And he says, I'm not getting up. I don't want to get out of bed. And she says, honey, come on, it's time to get up, time to go to church. They don't like me down there. I don't like that place. Oh, come on, honey, come on, it's okay, get up, get out of bed. It's time to go to church. I don't like it. I'm having a very bad day. I want to stay right here. Oh, but honey, you're the pastor. That was last week. Beloved, don't sink in your affliction. Run to the Word. Run to Nayot. Run to the place where God speaks. You got it right here, gang. You got it right here. It's kind of a good thing that I got shook up. Boy, sometimes we needed that good shake. So we grab hold tighter to God. Just a word to you songwriters. Write the songs of life. Write the songs of life. David's songs come from life. Let God use what He's doing in your life. Let God use your life to teach others through music. We are to teach one another with psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, making melody in our hearts to the Lord. You see that in David's life. Okay, let's go back and finish up this story. Oh, this is a great story. I love this story. I absolutely love it. This is one of my favorite. You know what? I say this every week, don't I? Okay. This is this week's favorite story. Okay. And so he and Samuel went and dwelt in Nayot. And it was told Saul, saying, behold, Saul is at Nayot in Ramah. And Saul sent messengers to take David, and when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. Now, this is just, oh, this is extra. The company of prophets prophesying, Samuel standing over them, that gives us this idea. Their school. He's teaching them how to prophesy. One of the Jewish Targum says they were praising. This is very similar and could be the same place as in 1 Samuel chapter 10 where Saul has his first encounter with the Holy Spirit and he comes across the company of prophets with their tambourines and musical instruments and they're prophesying, and then the Spirit comes on him and they prophesy. They are worshiping. And God works by His Spirit and touches these messengers of Saul. And says they start to prophesy. The word prophesy is nabah. I tried to figure out what this word means and figure out. And I don't know if I'm any smarter than the intellectual guys. There's lots of different schools of thought. The two main ones, one is that it just simply means to speak for somebody, to be a, And the idea is that the Spirit would come upon a prophet and he becomes the spokesman for God. Sometimes the Spirit is an evil spirit. Sometimes it's a demonic spirit. And the person, and it's the same word is used, says that they prophesy. We read last week, there was a verse that says the evil spirit came on Saul and he prophesied in the house with his evil spirit. There's times in Kings where it talks about this group of false prophets prophesying. So some suggest it means to be a spokesman for. Another suggestion is that it comes from a word, another word, very similar sounding word, which means to bubble up or pour out. And the idea is that when the Spirit comes upon you, the stuff just comes bubbling up. It just comes pouring out. I like that. That's an interesting picture. And so, you know, the idea is that these armed guards are coming to capture David. And there's Samuel and the prophets. And you've got to kind of guess that David must be there too. He was with Samuel. And they're worshiping the Lord and they're prophesying. And God's Spirit comes on them. And they join in. I love that. I love that. I absolutely love that. David would write in Psalm 62:6, not necessarily about this, but this is David's life. He says about God, he says, He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense, and I shall not be moved. So first, the first guys come, and the Spirit comes on them, and they prophesy. And they become, their swords turn into little daisies, and they just, they're happy. They're happy. And when it was told Saul, he sent other messengers, probably a little bigger, a little burlier. And they prophesied likewise. And Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied too. This is so cool. I love this. Then went he also to Ramah. You know, they say good help is hard to find. And so Saul is frustrated. He can't, well, can I get somebody to just go bring David back? And so he goes up. You got to do something. You got to do it yourself. He's probably grumbling as he walks the 2 miles to Ramah. And as he came to the great well that is in Seku, which means a watchtower. And he asked and he said, where are Samuel and David? And one said, behold, they be at Nayoth. They're at school in Ramah or Ramah. And he went thither to Nayot in Ramah, and the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Nayot in Ramah. And he stripped off his clothes also. NIV says he took his robes off. And he prophesied before Samuel in like manner and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? Now, I know some people are looking for what's the sign that the Spirit is upon you. I've never heard anybody use this verse. Sorry. Don't go there. Okay. Let's go to Psalm 27. This is where we'll end. And we'll share in communion. Now, Psalm 27 doesn't have one of these superscriptions that tell us or give us a suggestion where it might have been written. But when I came across this, I was thinking, this is so cool. This is so cool. Over and over again, we're going to see David delivered from his enemies. One time, it happened where David had to get up and run. Here's another time where God brings deliverance. David's just worshiping the Lord. He doesn't even... maybe he's got his eyes closed. He just might even not even know that they're there. And God just does it. God just takes care of it. Either way, God is taking care of it, you see. In one instance, he has to get up and run. In another instance, he's just worshiping the Lord. Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock. To me, I'm thinking of David being there at Nio, just worshiping the Lord and God just taking care of it all. And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy upon me and answer me. When thou saidst, seek my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of my enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. Here it is. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. To me, that you know, verse 13, it's all about hope. See, David had hope in God. He had hope that God would help him, that God would be his strength, God would be his deliverer. And that's how he could hold on. He said, I would have fainted otherwise. I would have just fainted dead away and they would have got me a long time ago. But I trusted, I waited, I hoped in the Lord. Not every day is a kill Goliath day. They will come every once in a while, where God says, slay the giant. But you know what? A lot of David's life was about trouble. And David learned to trust God in trouble, to wait on God, to hope on God. Sometimes David was rescued by him getting himself up and getting out the house. Sometimes God took care of it all on his own.